You're entering Wolfpack country on this special two-part episode of Jack Daniels Presents This Life Ain't For Everybody, and it's all about the University of Nevada baseball program. Let's meet today's opening lineup, powered by Bad Boy Mowers. Power, performance, attitude. Host Chad Belding.
When I played baseball, I was fearless.
Right.
I'd face any pitcher. I would dive into any play. I wanted to be Pete Rose. I wanted to be George Brett. And I still have that burning desire to win and to be the best.
Trainer Rob Knatzer.
Rob, you have a lot of credibility in the college space. You've trained a lot of athletes on the side that have went on to professional careers.
Yeah.
And Coach Jake McKinley.
Coach Jake McKinley, University of Nevada Reno baseball coach, head coach.
I'm not using this job to get the next big job. This is a job I've always targeted.
See, I love hearing that.
This episode of Jack Daniels Presents This Life Ain't For Everybody is brought to you by American Almond Beef, Cowboys Choice Feeds, Jack Links, and Traeger Grills. Let's get to Chad, Rob, and Coach Jake.
Coach, I got to start this off by asking, me and Rob were talking, Rob and I were talking, let's use correct grammar today, with when we were having a college baseball coach around us. Why doesn't the UNR baseball merch say baseball on it? Is this N only baseball's N, or is this all N's? But I want to be known as a baseball guy, and I wear this, and I know that they know that it's Nevada because of the blue. But why doesn't it say baseball on this or the shorts or anything? Did you make that decision, and or where are we at with that?
It's a heavy hitting question right out of the gate.
Right out of the gate. Let's not dick around.
No, exactly. So the N is actually just baseball.
Rob was right.
Yeah. So you'll see other sports. A lot of them have the wolf head. A lot of them have the pack script, you know, where it says pack with the swoop underneath. But the N is branded just for baseball. So my goal would be that the program gets to a level of prominence where when you see that, you know it's baseball.
Perfect. I love it.
Yeah.
So I've lived in Nevada for 49 years, and I did not know that. And wow. I played at UNR for Powers, kind of ish.
Okay.
Weird deal. But I really didn't play for. I got so many cool stories from that field, though.
You were in Vegas. You didn't know. I knew.
Yeah.
I knew. It's
because UNLV has an N like this. Not like this, but they got an N that they put on a lot of their stuff, too. But man, I had no idea. And I was, when I got it and I was going through it, I'm like, please let one of these say baseball on it. Cause I'm just like, I'm a heavy baseball guy.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I don't want to be, I love all sports except the one that Rob knows I don't like. Which one is it, Rob?
Football.
I'm not a football guy.
Okay.
I love watching football and I love that the Niners did what they did, but I just think that it's so dangerous.
Oh yeah. It's no joke.
It's weird.
Yeah.
That's when I was with, I know you guys know that I know Bo, and I don't think Bo probably would have played football again.
Oh, really?
I don't know that for a fact, but when you talk to him, you kind of get this like, I mean, it ruined his career. The injury finalized his career, ended his career. But I don't know. It's a scary sport to me, man.
Yeah. I think you got to ask him because there's something about football. Those guys, you know, you've talked to them. They love the game, but it is a hardcore game. But
yeah,
they love it.
So but, I'm a Jets fan. Which is outrageous, right? But I was born and raised a Jets fan. My dad is a huge Jets fan. So like that's my love for football. And obviously I want the Wolfpack to win, but I like to watch it, but I'm with you. So I played high school football, not well, I wasn't good, but I don't think I would do it again. It's sketchy.
It's super sketchy. It definitely is.
I love the Friday Night Lights and I love the Letterman's jacket. Yep. And I got caught up in that. But man, you could tell, my dad used to tell me before he passed away, he goes, you played scared all the time. Mm. When I did BMX or motocross or skateboarded, because I wanted to be Tony Hawk, I did it scared. When I played baseball, I was fearless.
Right.
I'd face any pitcher. I would dive into any play. I wanted to be Pete Rose. I wanted to be George Brett. But every time I'd get in a football helmet, I played like I was on the kickoff team. I'd run down there with a reckless abandon and then just almost – I couldn't have broke sheetrock by the time I got down there. I was just like, I'm like, oh God, now what do I do? And I admitted it. There was guys on our team that were just ruthless.
Yeah.
They would just fly around and smack people. And I'm like, damn, why am I not wired that way?
Yeah. I'm not either.
Why am I not wired that way?
Yeah. No, it's different. But again, so when we get into the argument, I go, well, what about bull riding in UFC? And, because all those guys are, or the, what's the series that Blake's brother's on?
The Red Bull Rampage, mountain biking down. Yeah. Have you seen that?
I've never seen it, but I've seen like intense mountain biking. And that's another thing you'll never see me do. You'll never see me in the octagon. More of a precision sport guy.
Precision sport. No, I like ping pong and bowling.
Yeah, exactly. Baseball.
Yeah, like this Cam Zink guy that comes on the podcast won the Red Bull Rampage again last year. It's in Utah. And they bring a team out, a crew, and they find the area that the Red Bull Rampage is going to be in. And then the crew goes out for each rider. And that rider's in charge of designing his own course to the level of difficulty that he or she thinks will win the Rampage. So wow. I'm talking, it's like 100% vert downhill, hitting jumps, backflips across canyons. And they do the craziest stuff. And the ones that create and build and design the best, most difficult course, and then they complete that course with technique, you know, with precision, he wins it. And I'm like, dude, he comes in here and he's just a normal dude. Yeah. And the shit he does on a bike, he has the world record for longest backflip jump at over 100 feet.
Man, that's something that I have so much respect for people that do stuff like that, but I will watch them with a cold drink in my hand. I won't participate in what
no,
they
me
do.
Too. No,
yeah,
I won't
it's
even.
Crazy.
No.
So, Coach, let's get into what we've been facing this week in Northern Nevada, and I'm sure you've gotten used to it. What is it like recruiting athletes to come to an area to where 2 weeks ago I was sitting behind home plate with shorts on, with sun rays on me? And I know weather can change anywhere, but Reno is it hard for players? Like yesterday, you got a walk-off. You went on a walk-off. Baseball, to me, is what I experienced in Scottsdale last week, Coach. It was 85 degrees, cold beer in my hand, and you're getting a suntan. Yeah. How is that been easy for you to adapt on the recruiting part of that, of bringing players in? They got to be a different type of mental toughness to play in this environment?
I think so. And, you know, the one thing in recruiting is – we don't sugarcoat the weather. I don't tell recruits that it's sunny and 75 every day. So they have to know what they're getting themselves into. And if you look at our roster, it's really diversified across the country. So we have a few kids from the Midwest, a few kids from the East Coast. Obviously, we have a lot of local players. There are some California players trickled in there, but really what we try to sell them on is opportunity from a player development perspective, opportunity from a student athlete experience perspective, and an opportunity that you will play and be seen by Major League Scouts. One of the coolest things about our program is we're uniquely positioned. We're the only Division I school in Northern Nevada. We're one of two Division I schools in the state. There are no junior colleges in Northern Nevada. So when it comes to Division I baseball, we're the only show in town. So one guarantee I can make to recruits is you will be seen by scouts. And if you perform, you'll probably get drafted. And I think that that is a unique situation. You think about a state like Texas. They have so many Division I's, so many Division II's, so many Division III's, so many JUCOs, and they're all good. The Division III's there are legit. So you're competing for scouts' eyes where we're really not. So to your point, yes, there has to be a certain level of mental toughness. You know, like you have to be fine with playing in some bad weather. But, you know, the East Coast guys think that this is no problem right now. California kids, sometimes I'm a California guy. It takes a little bit to adjust, but I think we can sell those components and that trumps the weather in the end.
I'm sure Rob has a thought on that, but my first thought was you said, if you come play at University of Nevada, Reno, you're going to be seen by scouts. There's UNLV in Las Vegas. There's Community College of Southern Nevada, right, where Harper played.
Yes.
There's there not one up here anymore? Western Nevada Community College has gone on the baseball program. Okay, so you got UNR in Reno, UNLV down there.
Yep.
Why would scouts come here unless the talent is unbelievable? Why wouldn't the scouts spend their time in a bigger pool to where they could hit a bunch of different games at one time? Do scouts come here based on your reputation, the school's reputation, Gary Powers' reputation for 20 years here? Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot of names on that wall behind the bleachers that have been drafted. Yeah. Why would scouts come here when there's only one school?
Yeah, good question. So scouting is, it's a regional profession. So every organization assigns a certain scout geographically, right? So there's, for example, there's the Four Corner Scout. They have the Four Corners. So Northern California, Northern Nevada is a territory, and a lot of area scouts are in that territory. So the reason they come here is it's geographical. It aligns with their geography, but also too, Division I baseball is the best level of competition. So they'll also see players from other teams come in, right? Like every team seems to have a couple pro prospects. But what you said is very true. Like, I think that we're putting a product out there that is desirable for scouts. Our Friday night starter, Jason Doctorzic, he should be a top 10 round pick this year. And so when he pitches on Fridays, there will be scouts there because they have to see a potential top 10 rounder. At the same time, you know, when they go see a guy like that, there's going to be other guys in the field that they take notice of. So there's a relief pitcher for us that really wasn't on the radar prior to this year, but, you know, he's been 95, 96 at times. And all of a sudden they're there and they see that. So then they got to come back. So as long as you put good talent out there, they will come. But you also touched on the reputation of the program long before I got here. You know, Gary Powers here for so long, so many big leaguers out of this program. When Jay and TJ were here, multiple draft picks, you know, out of those guys, guys that are in the big leagues now. So there's a little bit of a reputation, and I won't claim that I built that. You know, Coach Powers built that. The other coaches built that. But we're obviously trying to, you know, make sure that that stays and obviously grow it too, so we can become a factory for guys getting drafted.
Rob, you have a lot of credibility in the college space. When you watch college athletes like what Coach Jake is referring to, do you think that because an athlete is in an area like Reno, does it take something different to get noticed in this area? You've got a lot of experience in this area. You've trained a lot of athletes on the side that have went on to professional careers. Mm-hmm. Is what Coach is saying true? Because I'm wondering, like, back when I played, you would see a cross checker here once in a while, and you would see a regional scout here once mm-hmm. in a while. But man, when you go to Fresno and go to like a Bob Bennett clinic or a Bob Bennett game at Fresno State, it was like 30 guns behind the dish, right?
Sure.
And there was times like that happened in Northern Nevada. Sean Estes is 89 at Douglas, and Jason Rogers, mm-hmm. he's second round to Baltimore. Sean Estes is first round to Seattle, ends up going to the San Francisco Giants after he signed with Stanford. But to me, I never saw a lot of that. Maybe we just weren't good enough back then. Is it something to where there is a good pool of athletic talent in Northern Nevada?
Yeah, I think there is, because we're so close to California, you know, that we're getting some of those athletes. And I think the competition level here is great, you know, between those California schools and of course, L.A. And then you bring it up here. And I think Reno's an easy place to hit if you're traveling through, if you're driving, right? It's an easy stop. We've got a lot of things to offer for those guys to stop here, catch a game, and then go on to down to Stanford, down to Cal, you know, whatever, and catch a game there. So I think that's easy. And I think if you go way back, Nevada didn't have a conference. So when I was up there, they were in an independent ball because they were in a conference that didn't have baseball, but they still had some athletes that were leaving here and going on. And so created that, I guess, the layover here between high school and pro. So there were those kids that were opening up the door for the future kids coming through. And even though they were independent ball, they were great teams. I mean, the one year they had 45 wins or something crazy like that. They only had the 8 or 9 losses, and they were independent. So it was really tough to get a bid to even go into the super regional or the regional. So I do think we get great baseball here. And, you know, you kind of mentioned it earlier. It's a tough place to play, but if you can play here in the spring, shit, you can play anywhere.
I've gotten to really like Coach Jake. I really do. I think you got an awesome approach. I really liked how you handled the Lobo series, because I was getting ready to come over the fence. Like, I wasn't happy with the players. I wasn't happy with what was being said out of their dugout. Like, that was kind of a weird thing for me to see you on third base and have to deal with that. Like, that wasn't right to me. That was, I think that respect has a lot to do with the game of baseball, and I didn't like a lot of that. It was a really weird feeling to me to sit behind home plate and see, and just to hear that, and the stare downs and the arrogance. I was like, dude, is this the WWE? Like, what are we doing to college baseball? It was a weird approach, and I don't want you to talk on it, because I know you probably don't want to voice your opinion on what happened that day.
Oh, no problem.
Well, was it weird? Was that a weird deal?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny how baseball's evolved. Like, pitchers, I jokingly say, like, hey, this guy got the third out of an inning, a.k.a. he did his job. And then he's going to stare you down afterwards. Like, I've been stared down by a lot of pitchers this year, and I'm like, bro, like, I mean, it's baseball. Why are you staring at me? You got the third out of the first inning. Like, why does that warrant a stare down? But but I will say this. Like, we talk a lot as a team about the common and the uncommon things in sports or life. And I'm always like, every single team in the country is going to talk in the fall about adversity. It's coming, and you got to know how to deal with it. Like, every single team in the country talks about that. That's common. The uncommon thing is to respond how you say you're going to respond. And so we always talk about that. Like, hey, if somebody stares us down, if somebody's being bush, screaming at us, whatever, like, don't give it the time of day. But it's really hard to do, and it's really uncommon. So if I'm going to say that, then I have to model it. So if I'm going to get stared down by a 20-year-old because he got the third out, I'm not going to respond, because I tell the players they can't. So, like, I can't do it. Is it hard sometimes? Yeah. You know, like, there's been a couple times this year where, because it's just weird, because I have to walk back to the first base dugout, and the pitcher and I kind of cross paths, and I've been stared down a bunch, and I was just like, when did this start? And why are you doing that? Because you just did your job. Like, if you know, if I go like submit an expense report, I don't like stare somebody down afterwards.
I have an
right?
analogy. I have an analogy. When I was playing college baseball in 94, 95, there was bench clearing brawls. Like, you would get chin music and we would go to throwing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Carson Capitals 2 years in a row. We probably had 8 bench clearing brawls. Tony Enard, he went to the Mets, pitched at Sparks High, was an absolute genius on the mound. But that dude would throw at your head. If Nate Coates told him to ear hole somebody, we were fighting.
Right.
Every time. And Nate would step out in front of the batter before he even took one step and lay him out. And then the whole benches were clear.
Yep.
Here's my thought on this. Has social media played a role, and maybe even what Rob's going to go into here in a minute with the NIL, has ego changed because everybody has their own channel, their own level of credibility, their own level of quote-unquote celebrity now, to where a Lobos pitcher has this Instagram account that's got some followers, and it gives him this mechanism to do this now? It was almost like keyboard muscle. Like, you have critics. Everything I do, I'll get a comment. Like, you suck, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fine. Well, I don't even know your real name. You're hiding behind this pin name behind a keyboard. It just seems to me that the attitude of some of these players that I'm watching in college baseball now, because I go to quite a few games, it's almost like they have a celebrity already, and it gives them this ability to act out because they think somebody's filming them or recording them, or they're trying to... Does that make sense at all?
Yeah.
Has social media changed the way this game is now?
Oh, I think no question. Yeah. I mean, if you just think of this generation of players that are 18 to 22 in college baseball right now, they've basically had social media in their life, their whole life, you know, where it kind of like was new to us at some point in our adult lives. So they're really good at the video piece. They're good at taking pictures of themselves. So, yeah, I have no doubt that social media has impacted that. And it's funny you mention brawls. So I've been in 2 in my career. They're terrifying, you know, but it is one of those things, like, when the dust settles, you just kind of get back to the game. And I got a funny story. So I coached baseball in Australia a long time ago. And I always felt like over there with baseball, if you had a problem with somebody, like, it's almost like hockey. You're going to just fight and then it's over. Like, we're back to being friends. And there were multiple times where, you know, kid would tell me like, hey, I can't come to practice tonight because I got in a fight and, you know, I've got to go to the dentist, get some teeth replaced. Where I was like, that's funny because in America right now, it's kind of like, oh, this guy said this and this guy posted this on his Twitter. And then like his burner account said this about this guy, where we've gotten away from like, hey, let's just confront the problem here. And then we're going to go back to just playing baseball. That's kind of gone away too. So a lot of it, I do think you're right, is driven by social
media.
That's
where I was going, is that it just was, you would fight, it'd be done. And then you would respect the game again enough to where, I mean, I have just seen a total change of, I'm not saying that back in the 70s and 80s, you didn't get brawls or Nolan Ryan throwing at somebody, but man, it wasn't the same. It wasn't the same. And I know that everything evolves. I get that everything's going to evolve through time, but it just seems to me like there's a different attitude towards the approach of everything because everybody has their channel. It used to take something to get a channel or be on a network or be, you had to be Chris Berman to be able to sit down a seat and go back. But now everybody's got their own ability to critique baseball players and give you updates. Like, everybody can start their own thing, no matter if they got 4 listeners or 4 million.
Right.
It's a weird mindset to me. And when I saw that at the end of that Lobos game, I was like, man, I automatically looked at my buddy and I went, what is that guy doing right there? I've never seen that. Like, he got an out. Like, literally, that's the best way to put it. He got an out. You got an out. That's what you do as a closer. It's not that big of a deal.
Right.
And I know that closers have a different mentality and they're a little crazier.
Sure.
But to disrespect the game and to leave your opponent with that feeling that you are not a good person is not cool, in my opinion. So anyway, I think social media has a lot to do with the way that kids approach, the way they dress now, the way they feel before the game, the way they're taking selfies, the way they're getting hyped up. It's changed it. It truly has.
You know what's funny too? So I don't know if you guys follow the recruiting world at all for baseball and football, but one of the things that's really common is you go on your official visit and you do a photo shoot in the uniform for that team. And I always joke, like, tell me like I'm an old grumpy man, but I will not do it. Like, if you're going to come on an official visit, you're going to see Reno. You're going to get to know the coaches. I'm going to have you hang out with the players. But our program does not exist for you to get social media likes. And also, my theory is, like, we're trying to build this into something prominent. 40 people in the world will wear our uniform per year. Our uniform does not exist so you can do a photo shoot. And I don't know if I'm like losing recruits.
No, dude,
because
that
of
gave
that.
Me goosebumps here. Yeah. That's awesome. Well, that's awesome. You don't just get to put it on.
No, you got to earn it.
Get to put it on. Just so you can put it on. It's almost like those UFC fight pictures after they go in front of the green screen and they're getting them. It's not what the UNR baseball is about.
No.
You got to earn it.
Yeah.
You got to earn it.
No, I'm glad you mentioned that because I know we're going to get into some of that and I want to get your take on it. But real quick, I want to go back 35 years, what we used to do at Nevada and before your time even. We were the right field rowdies. That field was built so cool that we could just park and it was all dirt and there was a little road there. So we'd park there, bring out the barbecues, and we would just probably like the New Mexico game. That's what made me think about
players.
We would just sit there and heckle, but we were pretty clean. You know, mm-hmm. we tried to keep it clean. Every once in a while, it got a little out of hand, but we sat above them. And then when they got rid of that, I was like, oh man, that was such a cool thing. But you know, in today's game, you can't do that. But we used to just sit out there and just heckle teams. And so when you were talking about what those guys were doing, I'm like, huh, I wonder if it was kind of like.
No, I remember the right field rowdies, and I remember playing at Ole Miss. I remember playing at Mississippi State. I remember playing at schools that were notorious. San Diego State had an outfield chatterbox system to where, and my last name's Belding, and Saved by the Bell was the show of, you know, the show of young kids then. So they just lit me yep. up about Mr. Bell. And I was like, man, this is awesome.
Yeah.
Like I love chatter by the audience, the fans. I don't like if you, as long as it's to a certain amount of respect.
Yeah,
there was a guy that same Lobo series behind home dish that was wearing the umpire out, and I'm like, hey, I mean, when you get an umpire to look back and he's got his Bugs Bunny ears out, and like you're not supposed to do that as an umpire,
right?
He looked back, and I'm like, oh, dude,
you're
this dude's in his box, dude.
you're in trouble.
Let me ask you that about what Rob's talking about, though, Coach. Excuse me, are you in your 40s?
I will be this year, so I'm turning 40 in October.
You're very young. You're still in that, like me. I'm 9 years older than you. And I still have that burning desire to win and to be the best. Like, how bad does it mess with your psyche when you see other programs? Like, I just was, it was Vandy. There was probably 4,000 people at the game.
Mm-hmm.
I was just watching an Alabama series. There, mm-hmm. every seat was full.
Mm-hmm.
How bad does it mess with you when he talks about the right field rowdies and kind of that culture of the fan? Yeah. I don't like the support that UNR baseball gets. And I'm speaking to you, Reno, out there. If you hear this, if there's something that we can do with Nevada tourism, if there's something we can do with the local people that live here, so Reno's always kind of been that. How do you describe that audience? Front
we're
runner?
We're tricky as hell.
Tricky, right?
Like, we talk about it all the time. We are front runner. There's another term that we use.
Transient audience.
Fair weather.
Fair weather, totally.
And but if you were 20-0 right now, and I'm not saying that you're not going to be 20-0, you guys are off to a great start. Would the wins matter, Rob, in baseball here? Would it bring the crowd?
It might not till late season, just because they are the weather. And we kind of think, we talk about all the time, that there's so many other opportunities of doing stuff here that it makes it tough. Mm-hmm. And even I noticed that this year, UNLV for the first time in forever, Thomas and Mac was crazy the last two games they had. Mm-hmm. But last year, I don't even know if there was 2,000 fans. Mm-hmm. And when we played down there basketball, I think 1,000 of them were from Northern Nevada. So between Nevada and Vegas, it's a tricky
the AAA market. Was getting some good crowds last year. I went to a couple Aces games.
They do.
Mm-hmm. They were pretty
jacked.
But
they're full summer. I mean, they opened this weekend, if I'm not mistaken. I think I heard they opened this weekend. They'll probably get a decent crowd, but it's going to be ugly.
We're going to break here for a few commercials. I'm fired up. I appreciate y'all being here.
It all starts with talent, and Coach Jake is giving recruits the opportunity to showcase their skills in front of scouts.
Really, what we try to sell them on is opportunity from a player development perspective, opportunity from a student athlete experience perspective, and an opportunity that you will play and be seen by Major League scouts. One guarantee I can make to recruits is you will be seen by scouts, and if you perform, you'll probably get drafted, and I think that that is a unique situation.
Jack Daniels presents This Life Ain't For Everybody is powered by Bad Boy Mowers. Mow with an attitude. Find their powerful line of tractors, mowers, and tools at badboycountry.com. Keep it right here. The guys will be right back.
Hey, everybody, you know we are a huge fan of Jack Daniel's, not just their product, but their mission, their culture, Lynchburg, Tennessee, the people. And we want to introduce you to the Jack Daniel's Single Barrel Program. Join us at jackdaniels.com and learn about the Single Barrel Program, visiting Lynchburg, Tennessee, participating in a barrel tasting, a whiskey tasting, picking your favorite flavor, whether it's the burn in your mouth, whether it's the maple, whether it's the different combination of flavors that you are going to experience in each of the distinct bottles of Jack Daniel's Single Barrel. You're going to be able to choose the best one, your favorite one, and purchase that entire barrel. It all comes bottled in individual single barrel bottles. You get your own hanging name tag, brand tag, your logo on it. You can give them away as gifts. Go knock on the door of a landowner and say, thank you for letting me hunt your field. There's so many options with the Jack Daniel's Single Barrel Program. We're proud to be part of it. We have introduced it to so many of our friends and family across the country, whether it was at a business, whether it was at a duck lodge, whether it was at a conservation event. It is truly an awesome program. Learn more about it at jackdaniels.com. The Single Barrel Program. We've been involved for the last 5 years. I'm looking at two of my barrels right now. We just got our 2023 barrel in the single barrel rye. Absolutely mesmerizing. My brother Clint's old fashions with it speak for themselves. It's the Jack Daniel's Single Barrel Program. Check it out. Learn about it. I hope you decide to visit Lynchburg, Tennessee and get your own barrel. Thank you very much.
Looking for a high-quality truck accessory that's built to last? Look no further than Lear. With over 50 years of experience in the industry, these guys know what it takes to make your ride look and performance best. Whether you're looking for a fiberglass or aluminum cap, a hard or soft cover, or accessories to customize your truck, Lear's got you covered. Their products are made with only the best materials, and their innovative features provide added convenience and security for truck owners. Head over to Lear.com to explore their range of products and take your driving experience to the next level.
We travel a lot. We're up and down America's highways, byways, thoroughways, cornfields, dirt roads, back roads, country roads. Love seeing that dust in our rear view. Love looking over and seeing the sunset, the sunrise, mallard ducks pitching in to a pond in Kansas, a coyote howling in Wyoming, an antelope standing on the side of the road in Nevada. We get to do this all through Ford trucks. Corning Ford, Paul, Francis, the entire crew, the customer service, the service department, the selection, the dedication to excellence and quality. The number one Ford Super Duty dealer in the Western United States 5 years in a row. They're in the top 10 in the country, and they're in a little tiny town, Corning, California. 5,000 people deep maybe, but the construction, the farming, the ranching, the almonds, the walnuts, the olives, the duck hunting, the fishing, the deer hunting and turkey hunting, predator hunting, you name it. Corning Ford is part of it. They support our lifestyle, their pricing. They refuse to mark them up. Give them a try. They'll deliver your truck anywhere in the country. They've delivered them to Alaska, Florida, so many to Nevada, so many to Northern California, all over Arizona and Colorado. They've delivered three to Tennessee. They delivered one to Minnesota to our friend Andrew at Wild Acre Kennels. It's Corning Ford. They support the outdoors, and there's nothing better than a Ford truck. These 2023 Ford Super Duties, F-250s, F-350s, the long bed, the short bed, the Tremor package. Watch your speed. Set that cruise control, because sometimes you'll look down and be like, I'm not going that fast. Something's got to be broken. And you're pulling a trailer, and you got a Lear topper on the back of it. The bed of your truck is full. They're meant for hauling. They're meant for towing. Thank you, Francis. Thank you, Paul. There's nowhere better in the country to buy your next Ford vehicle or Ford Super Duty truck than Corning Ford. Thank you all for supporting them. Vision. I just had a lens retraction surgery last year. It's pretty much like cataracts that you're going to get in your 60s, 70s. Everybody's going to get it. Once you get it, your vision is there. It's never changing. Artificial lenses. I had it at 40s, and I'm telling you, with what I do with duck hunting and scouting and watching my daughter grow up, I'm just so thankful that I'm back to 20/15 in my right eye and 20/20 in my left eye, thanks to Dr. Matt Mills, who you've all heard on our podcast. But I want to protect my eyes, and that's exactly where one of our badass partners comes in. Oakley, Oakley Eyewear, the Oakley culture, the Oakley lifestyle. Protect your vision when you're shooting, when you're fishing. Nothing worse than getting a hook in the eye with somebody casting on the same boat. You just can't take it for granted. The damage the sun can cause, the rays, the UV, just keeping the dust and the dirt out of your eyes, just everything during a hunt, pit blind, boat blind, it doesn't matter, sun up. They make different lenses for different skies. They're sold all over the world, and they support the military and the Blue Line. and conservation and hunting and fishing in the outdoors and living off the land. And we never hunt without our Oakleys. Everybody's like, why you always got your sunglasses on? Shouldn't be wearing sunglasses. You probably shouldn't in turkey hunting. I don't wear them in turkey hunting because of the vision of a turkey and the reflection. But when I'm shooting trap range or the sporting clays or the skeet or the five stand, or I'm in a duck hunt or a goose hunt, I have my Oakleys with me at all time. I put them in my banded backpack. I have them in an Oakley hard case. I keep them protected. The prism, lenses, everything that goes in to the technology behind the Oakley brand and the frames, the function of them, all of the different lenses that you can get, like I mentioned, and the way they protect our eyes. The prism lens technology is second to none. You got to get a pair of Oakleys. I know there's a lot of choices out there when you want to protect your eyes, but remember, please support the brands that support this lifestyle. Oakley, the official eyewear of the Foul Life TV, the Foul Life podcast, and everything we do here at The Provider and Where the Pavement Ends. Thank you so much for supporting Oakley.
Welcome back to part one of this special episode of Jack Daniels Presents This Life Ain't For Everybody with Chad Belding and guest Jake McKinley, head coach of the University of Nevada baseball program, as well as Rob Knatzer from Sierra Strength and Speed.
We're trying to build this into something prominent. 40 people in the world will wear our uniform per year.
And you don't just get to put it on.
No, you got to earn it.
Coach Jake is discussing what it takes to grow the Wolfpack baseball program and garnering more support from fans.
Do you care about the crowd size?
Yeah, I absolutely do. And that was my big thing. I was like, how do we get more people to go to baseball games? And yes, you have to win. We have to take a little bit of a grassroots approach to getting the crowds bigger.
Plus, developing talent worthy of big league attention.
I think that we're putting a product out there that is desirable for scouts. As long as you put good talent out there, they will come.
Thanks to Resist All, Scoreboard Nashville, The Provider, and Mickey Thompson Tires for supporting This Life Ain't For Everybody. Let's rejoin the guys.
So we're going to start this with Coach Jake McKinley, University of Nevada Reno baseball coach, head coach. We're starting this answer from him by saying that we are fair weather fans only to wear.
We are.
Okay, well, I was out there 2 weeks ago, and it was almost 68 degrees, and it was, I was like, I looked at my guys, and I said, I came to the Fresno State Series last year with Jason Donnelly, who's a mutual friend of ours. I've known Jason for 30 years. Jason told me it was the first good weather of the season last year, like that last series against Fresno State. How does it affect your psyche when you see all these programs bringing in good crowds, good amount of revenue, ticket sales? They're all wearing merch. They're behind their team. You stated 10 minutes ago, Coach Jake, that you want to get this in to where it's an icon. You want it to be where everybody's like, oh, that's Coach Jake's baseball program. That's University of Nevada Reno's baseball program. Yeah. How does it mess with your psyche in this? Because you're young and you're competitive. And I'm not saying that when you're 60, you're not competitive, but do you care about the crowd size?
Yeah, I absolutely do. So, you know, I'll tell you this. When I got the job last year, that was one of the things I peaked at was attendance. You know, attendance over the years. And I understand the weather situation. And that was my big thing, though. It's like, how do we get more people to go to baseball games? And I think there's a component of, yes, you have to win. You have to win championships. You have to be known as a winner because I think that does attract people. But I also think Reno is unique. So it affects my psyche because I do want bigger crowds for our players. And I think it helps you in recruiting. Mm-hmm. But I think we have to take a little bit of a grassroots approach to getting the crowds bigger. So our attendance has gone up. But I think it's been a lot of us just like getting out in the community. They say biggest little city in the world for Reno specifically. And I feel that, right? Like, so there is this small town vibe here, but like we've got to get out. So any chance we have to do community service, like we do it. Anytime I'm asked to do anything in the community, whether it's appear somewhere, talk somewhere, I always do it. But I think we're going to have to like really, really focus on like intimate relationships with a lot of different parties. So I want, hopefully in a few years, that you come to a baseball game at Piccoli and the place is full, even if it's cold. You know, that would be my goal. But I also understand it's not an overnight process. And I'm playing the long game. And I've said this before, I'm not using this job to get the next big job. This is a job I've always targeted.
See, I love hearing that because I was going to talk to you about stepping stones in the coaching career. Mm-hmm. I think it's a killer thing to have a coach that is ready to be loyal. Like, if I don't know if you can sign a 10-year deal as a coach. I don't know how that works in NCAA, but that is coming out of the head coach's mouth that he's here to stay. TJ, I was working with TJ, and then all of a sudden, bam, you can't blame a guy for trying to, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, Nate Yeske, my buddy that I came up with, was, you know, he was drafted, played at UNLV, then got drafted by the Dodgers again, then he was at Oregon, and then he was at Texas A&M, and now he's at LSU with Jay Johnson. Yeah. That's a pretty good freaking, you know, career so far.
Yeah.
But to hear Coach Jake say, this is where I want to be, that's even more reason for us to get behind him. And I'm just as guilty as anybody. I'm not sitting here saying Chad Belding's been at every UNR baseball game for the last 10 years. I haven't.
Me neither.
Yeah.
I haven't.
No, I guess.
But man, when I went the other day and I get to know you and I know that you're committed to it, I want to work harder to, don't you want to work harder to fill it?
It's a good product. And you know it's a good product. And the people who go, it's a good product. It's a tricky situation. It's a constant work to build it up. And I think you're right on it. And I think you've got some local kids on your roster, which I think helps. And that was really funny at Nevada for a while. You're new here. And one of the problems with Nevada has always been we recruit out, you know. Sure. And of course, you got to get the best kids and the kids who want to come in. But I think if we had more of the local kids, it does help that, right? Puts the butts in seats. And and it's sad when you go to the game and it's not crowded, because of course the kids are going to thrive off that. You know, it's just when the crowd's louder. We were talking about that the other day, just at these NCAA games. You know, if there's a big crowd there, it makes a difference. And if they're rooting for you, it gets you going. So,
Last night I watched a
really good interview with Bob Melvin, the new manager of the San Francisco Giants. And it went back to his Oakland A's game, his days as the manager in Oakland. And I was like, oh my gosh, look at those stands. Look at the fans. It was mayhem. And now you go there and you can hear a pin drop. I went there two games last year and there was less than 2,400 people in that stadium. It holds like 60.
Right.
Crazy. Think about how sad that is.
It's a football stadium.
My point was, as part of this interview with Bob Melvin, Coach Jake, was they asked him a question and he said, and this goes back to Rob's comment about a great product. He goes, nobody thought we would win. He goes, if you looked at our roster, there was not one recognizable name in there. He goes, now you compare that to the 2024 Giants. It's not a ton of recognizable names if you're looking against like the Padres or the Dodgers. He said, we're going to win. He said, we're a team. We have a great team. We have great chemistry. He goes, we're bringing the chemistry back to the Bay Area in San Francisco. And that makes me think of your squad, is that if you win, which you are, that's all it should take. You might go to the College World Series in Omaha, and how many teams go? Eight?
Eight.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what school you're at. That team in Michigan that I didn't even know, Oakland. I was like, Oakland, California has a college? I thought it was just Berkeley. And I'm like, oh, it's Michigan.
Yeah.
And they beat Kentucky. Now, they come back and they only lose by a few points in overtime to South Carolina a couple days later. They could have easily been in the Sweet 16.
Yep,
the Elite 8. UNR went to the Elite 8 a couple years ago, didn't they?
I think they lost in 16.
Oh, they did in 16? Yeah. I thought they went to the Elite. My point is, Coach Jake, how does that transition in your psyche and your coaching approach of, I know we can do it. Can you play against Texas A&M? Can you compete against Florida? Can you compete against Vandy and these schools that have been consistently going to the College World Series?
You know, it's funny. So I started, when I got the job, the schedule was basically set for 2023 and 2024. So I started building the schedule out 25 and beyond. So, you know, next year we open at Cal and then we go to Auburn and then we go to Georgia Tech. In 2026, we open up at Ole Miss. So I think if you're going to try to build a prominent product, you need to go compete against the best teams in the country. And I saw that in recruiting. Like, if we're going to get where I think we can go, we need to go challenge ourselves. Mm-hmm. So yes, I mean, that was a big reason why I took this job. I mean, I had a sweet gig with the Brewers.
Like,
dream gig with the Brewers. And there was always a couple jobs in college baseball that I had targeted, like, hey, if this ever worked out, this would be a no-brainer. And Nevada was like at the very top of the list, because I think it's uniquely positioned geographically that you have access to the entire country. Local players are good. I do think you can win over a fan base and you can get a great game day environment. And I think in recruiting, like, I think we can truly recruit any kid in the country. We had the number one player in the state of Michigan commit to us this morning. So
it's, wait, you just said that like it was an everyday thing.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Michigan high school?
Yeah, he's a high school player from Michigan.
What position?
Right-handed pitcher.
When you say commit, what does that mean?
So he's a 2025 graduate, so he's an 11th grader, but he has committed that he will come to Nevada. He announced it on his Twitter, and he'll sign his letter of intent for us in November. So he'll be on our team in the fall of 2025.
So verbally, he's committed.
Mm-hmm.
When is he allowed to sign?
Next November.
Next November of 2025 as a senior?
Yes.
If he gets drafted next June after his senior year in 25, Is he that kind of player to where you could be all hyped up for him and then all of a sudden the money comes, like Robbie Snelling?
Yep.
I mean, LSU's got Robbie Snelling coming, left-handed pitcher, throws 95 geese from the left side. All of a sudden the Padres take him the first round. Well, LSU loses a big recruit. They probably knew they were going to.
Yeah.
Do you know that? Like with this kid, has he got that type of
Yeah, yeah. Oh. And the players that we've signed in this class, we're going to battle it too. You know, there's a shortstop we signed, actually South Korean kid, and we're going to battle that too. And so for me, there's two things. One, I think if you go to the Division I level and you're really dominant, you can get more money as a kid, right? So like we do sell that. But also, and I know we're going to probably talk NIL a little bit, that is a space that I think can counteract some of that, where it's like, hey, if you come here, you're not going to go backwards financially and you're going to get opportunities to play, which could lead to more money in the future. But yes, like the better players we're getting access to, the more we realize that the draft is going to be something that could be a constraint for our program. And I'm not afraid of it. We just got to be strategic with how we handle it.
If this kid's so good in Michigan, Rob and Coach Jake, if he's so good at what you're saying he is, and he has a chance to be a high draft pick in 25, why would he choose Nevada? How did you do this? Because I would assume other schools are looking at him, or did you just get lucky and you're driving through Dearborn, Michigan one day, I'm assuming that's where he's from, and you're like, wow, I just heard this pop of a bat and went and looked at the baseball field. How did you get him?
So we did have a mutual connection that was working with him. The mutual connection turned us on to him, and it was one of those where, like, Jay Johnson told me this. It was great advice. He said, the key to getting good players at Nevada is just get them to come on the visit. Because, like, if you're out in Michigan, you probably don't know anything about this place. My first conversation with the kid was like, hey, do you know anything about us? And he said, no. But get them to come on a visit. Take them on an official visit. Show them the town. Introduce them to the community. The campus is unbelievable.
It's amazing.
But I sell recruits on three things. Player development, number one. So I think in college sports right now, college baseball in particular, is these teams have so much money and they're buying all this stuff to represent that players get better when they're here, right? There's things, TrackMan, Edgertronic cameras, all these devices. But when I hired my coaching staff, I wanted people that could apply it. Like if I bought a spaceship, it doesn't mean I'm an astronaut. I got to know how to fly it, right? So I sell them on player development. Like you will get better here. And we will be able to have the information and the data to back up that you will get better here. Secondarily, student athlete experience is the second thing I sell. Like, I don't care if it's baseball practice, if it's weights, if it's a community service project, anything related to baseball, when the schedule drops in your phone, you're going to be looking forward to it. And if that's ever not the case, then I need to be held accountable as the coach. But you're going to love your experience here. Tell all these kids, I got to coach a little bit in the big leagues in 2021. And getting to know the guys in the dugout, I'd ask them, like, where did you go to college? And those answers were all over the place, like Power 5 Division 1s, JUCO, D3, NAIA. And then my second question was, how'd you like your experience? And if they ever said, you know, like, eh, it was just okay, I think that sucks no matter what level you played at. So I'm like, if I had a player that played here, got to the big leagues, and some dude said, how'd you like playing at Nevada? And I'm like, eh, wasn't that great. Then I totally failed them, even if they made it all the way there. And then lastly, it's a community deal. Like you're going to have a community that loves you, that supports you, and we're going to love it back. So for me, it's if we can recruit the best players, make sure that they get better, make sure they have a great experience, and really entrench them into the community, then I do think that those things like getting to a regional, getting to a super regional, getting to Omaha, they're not out of the question. Is it going to be difficult? It's difficult for everybody. But it's not out of the question, and I'm not afraid to talk about it.
You're up, Rob. I could talk to Coach all day, but I don't want to be the
voice. Good. I love it. You brought it up, and I want. Are you using much technology right now? Just because in my facility we go back and forth, and I'm like, yeah, well, the tech is great. Like for me personally, we don't have time to analyze and go through and do all this stuff because we don't see the kids like you do daily. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, well, we could spend a lot of money on that, but are we going to get a return on investment where, you know, it can be very beneficial for you guys? So what are you using on the tech side if it's not
secret? Nothing proprietary. Everybody has it. So I'll actually flip this as a question back to you guys. Stay with me on this. Have you guys ever played Mario Kart?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is my analogy with all of it. So over winter break, because I'd like to consider myself like pretty good Mario Kart player. And over the break, I was playing against a friend and we played the new one on the Nintendo Switch and I got crushed. I was terrible, you know, but I consider myself good at this. And so, but what I was thinking is like, well, I was really good at like the Nintendo 64 one, the GameCube one. But the franchise of Mario Kart has like grown, like the number of players you can use has grown. The number of weapons you have has grown. The number of tracks you can race on has grown. The strategy has grown. So you as the player have to evolve. But I think it's also death if I'm like, well, I was good at this one. Therefore, like, I'm not going to play with you in this one. So what I tell the boys is the fundamentals of Mario Kart have never changed. If you can just simply drive and stay on the track and avoid doing something stupid, you're going to have a chance to win. But at the same time, the franchise has grown. And if you turn a blind eye to it, you're going to get left behind. So for me as the coach, we have every piece of technology that you could really need to help a player get better, and we have to know how to use it. But that does not dismiss us from relying on just good fundamentals. Like, you have to just be able to drive on the track. You have to be able to play catch. You have to be able to have a good approach at the plate. You've got to be able to field a ground ball. But there is low-hanging fruit in development, and we can't avoid looking into those things because we are an old school guy or a new school guy. You've got to be able to do it all, in my opinion.
Nice.
So when I hired our coaches, I was really selective. Like, hey man, don't give me buzzwords. Like, I want to know how you're going to leverage technology, but at the same time, like, can you just get to know a human?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because sometimes data will tell us, hey, this guy needs to play in this situation, but have you gotten to know the guy? Does he have something going on away from the field? Those types of things. So for me, to answer your question, we have every piece of technology. We are responsible users of it, but we also very much prioritize a relationship with a human being.
That's huge. We talked about this yesterday, and Blake was talking about Rocket League, because my kids every once in a while go, hey, will you play Madden with me? I can't. It's like you said, it's changed so much. I'm like, I know two codes here. There's 27 freaking codes now. I'm like, I can do the quick thing. You're going to pick up on that in 2 minutes, and I'm going to get killed 72-0. And so he was talking about Rocket League, and I'm like, yeah, I watch it. The kids play it. But I'm like, I couldn't do it because it's out of my technology league. It's crazy. So
yeah, and what you're saying is true, because in my business, I came up traditional TV.
Yeah.
And you would go to an event and you'd shake an end consumer's hand and you'd be like, hey, I'm Chad Belding and this is what we do. And thank you for the support. And now we couldn't be ignorant to TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, mm-hmm. YouTube,
yep.
Over the top, OTT, streaming. Nobody even knows what cable is anymore.
No.
The kids that played for you were like, a couple of them have hit me up since they've seen us working together and they're fans.
Yeah.
And it's only because they saw us on social media. They saw us on YouTube. If I would have just been ignorant back in the day and said, no, we're only sticking with traditional TV and cable,
yeah.
And a satellite on your house, you know what I mean? It's kind of the same thing.
Totally.
But I don't know how to do all of those. I've just kind of got the team around of like, all right, we needed somebody that's an expert on what it takes to grow a YouTube channel.
Yep.
And I'll get on camera all day and film and be on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you're so right. It's like, you can't just get away. My expertise is I could fly to Maryland and sit down with the president and CEO of Benelli Shotguns and have a one-on-one like this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You can't get away from that.
Right.
And a lot of people, younger people, don't even know what conversing means.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
They would rather text their mom, I love you, or happy birthday, than actually go see them or call them and hear the voice. It's gotten so easy for us just to be like, text is good enough.
Yep.
DM is good enough. What?
Yep.
No, it's not. That's not how you make relationships or really, you know, really ground them.
Yep. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I had to stay true to what I was good at. But at the same time, what you're saying, Coach, is like, you can't be afraid to use all of this stuff or you're going to get left behind.
Yeah, no doubt. And you know, the other thing, and I say it to the guys all the time, is like, people like to do the things that they're good at. You know what I mean? So like, a great example, I was like trying to teach myself piano over winter break, and I got an app. It's called Musician. It's almost like Guitar Hero for an actual instrument. And I'd play it, and you know, you get like kind of good at one song, and then they introduce you to a new song, and it's, you know, challenges your fingers. It sucks. Hard. Like, it sucks to fail at things.
Yeah.
But it is like the only way to get better. And I'll tell you, when I got to the Brewers right away, I still to this day don't know why they hired me, but you know, when I got there, they were introducing TrackMan plots, and I was looking at it and I'm like, I'm screwed. I don't understand this. But eventually, you know, I did. So to your point, it's like, I think we all have our wheelhouse. We all have our things that we're good at. But we also have to grow.
But I do love what you said, Jake, because honestly, I really think it's that human, it's that connection, and you've got to have it. That's what I look for in my guys. I do the most informal interview. Now, I'm not on the scale like you are, but I do the most informal interview because I'm like, I can teach you the nuts and bolts. Yeah. If you don't have people skills, we're worthless. And I think kind of going back to what you said earlier, if I'm reading you right, we're not a Power Five baseball team, but putting a good team together and getting them to communicate and do all the right things, you can beat anybody, right? I mean, like you mentioned with the Oakland basketball team, it's one of those things.
To become
that right up there,
that level,
right up there with them. And sometimes it's that personal side that can do it, you know, because it's a team sport. It's nine guys working together and putting it all on the field at the right time and doing the right thing, doing their job.
Is the approach to baseball even comparable to what it was when we came up playing? I'm a little older than you, but back in, like, you see guys that are not choking up and spreading out. Mm-hmm. You see with two strikes.
Right.
You see guys that are letting a third strike go by because they couldn't hit it out of the yard. It's a weird mindset. It's all of these numbers and all of the, what you guys are referring to as technology. I like the pitch clock. I think it's, I like the way baseball moves along now. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's bad.
Right.
Nope. But I also don't agree with a lot of the technology when it comes to the velocity or the whatever. You know, I don't even know all of the terms, because when I'm sitting with Will Clark and Will Clark comes up and he's the player of the year in college and then a first pick in the draft and then everything that he achieved, and he's sitting there telling me, like, who gives a shit?
Mm-hmm.
If the ball's over the plate, you hit the ball. Mm-hmm. If you're a pitcher, you got this wide to throw it. You don't throw it here, you throw it over here. And if you can't do that, then you probably shouldn't be here. He goes, what's wrong with just saying that? But that's why Will Clark won't coach. Because he doesn't, you know what I'm saying? He's a liaison, and he'll go down and hit fungo and talk to the players.
Yeah.
But he's not a coach.
Yeah.
And he says there's one of the reasons is he can't keep up with all of this shit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, you're right. Like, the approach has changed. But I will tell you the piece of data I am most interested in, and that's, at the end of the game, do we have more runs than the other team? That's it. Like, there's a lot of paths to get there, but that's what I care about, because that's ultimately how our team will be measured. So it's really tricky in today's game, because you do have 40, at least at the Division I level, 40 very, very talented players. Nine of them are on the field at a time, 31 or not, and formulating a team concept. You know, it's funny for us, like, our number one starter that I said it should be a pretty high draft pick, like, he's mostly 89 to 92. So it's not like overwhelming velocity. He'll touch a 94, 95, but what he does is he just throws tons of strikes. The guy thrown for us today is more 86 to 90, throws a ton of strikes. And I've talked to so many scouts lately, and you know what I've learned is guys that throw 3 to 4 pitches for strikes and are super competitive, that still works. It still works. Like, and I think we've gotten away from that a little bit, where scouts, I think, and rightfully so, because they have a job to do and they answer to an organization. But I think scouts will automatically, like, avoid a guy that throws 86 to 88. But we have seen that work in the big leagues in our lifetime. And I don't think, as a coach now, when I watch it, I don't think that has gone away. I still think it works. So, you know, I saw this thing, I want to say it was maybe the Nationals. There was a sign in their bullpen that said, I don't care how hard you throw ball for. As a coach, I still want our hitters to move the ball with two strikes. I still want them to put the ball in play. But again, it is this very fine line you have to walk, where it's, we want you to move on and play pro baseball. You know, so that's going to involve throwing hard. That's going to involve hitting the ball hard. But we also have this team concept. We have to win.
Wow.
So it's very tricky. And so I really think you get there through, you know, empathy, you know, putting yourself in the shoes of the players and helping them reach their individual goals, but also instilling in them a team concept. And I think that's really what coaching's turned into.
Do you have to be a stud defensive outfielder to play D1 college baseball, or do you have to be a guy that can do the fundamentals, maybe not gap to gap, maybe not lead the league in assists, maybe not be able to rob a home run or lay out? And because a great outfielder to me is one of the coolest things to watch, kind of like a shortstop, right? Or do you just have to go to the plate with this prowess of hitting 30 bombs or 24 bombs and having 60 ribbies in a college season, 70 ribbies in a college season? What is a coach going to put on what kind of product does he want on the field? Do you even have to be a great defensive player anymore to make the team?
I'd like to say yes, but I think as a rule, like, if you can really, really hit, you're going to probably get a roster spot somewhere. I'll tell you what, though. We won that game yesterday because we had an unbelievable defensive play. They had the bases loaded in the top of the 11th. They hit a ball really hard, and we made a circus diving catch to get out of the inning. We probably lose that game if that catch isn't
made. What position made it?
It was the second baseman. So he was in the shift. It was lined into right field. I mean, it was just full extension Superman catch. I wish we had good footage of it because I'm positive it would be a SportsCenter top 10 play. I was telling my dad last night, I've got it as maybe the best catch I've ever seen, just given the situation. But, you know, you asked about outfielders and, like, same thing. Like, if you have a guy that can take hits away from the other team, I mean, that's just, like, so, so valuable. So I put a priority on defense. Like, I have very little tolerance for bad defense. So I think every coach is going to answer that question differently. But for me, like, you have to be able to not only catch the ball, throw the ball, but you've got to be able to, like, take hits away from the other team. And when I formulate our lineup, I absolutely consider the defensive part maybe just as much as the offensive part.
You're under the microscope a lot as a college coach.
Yeah.
I want to go into this community a little bit more on our next episode when we bring Coach Jake back. But today, this has been another episode of This Life Ain't For Everybody podcast with Rob from Triple S, Coach Jake McKinley from the University of Nevada Reno baseball program. Thank you all for listening to another episode of This Life Ain't For Everybody.
Taking a baseball program to new heights also means taking on new challenges.
You know, next year we open at Cal, and then we go to Auburn, and then we go to Georgia Tech. In 2026, we open up at Ole Miss. So I think if you're going to try to build a prominent product, you need to go compete against the best teams in the country. And I saw that in recruiting. Like, if we're going to get where I think we can go, we need to go challenge ourselves.
Bad Boy Mowers, Flask Gap, Gator Coolers, and Corning Ford bring you this special two-part episode of This Life Ain't For Everybody with Chad Belding. Thanks for listening. Chad, Coach Jake, and Rob will return in a moment.
What's going on, everybody? Chad Belding coming at you. The Foul Life Podcast is proudly presented by the one and only Bad Boy Mowers. Out of the great state of Arkansas, their zero-turn design and capability is zero to none. I've had these mowers everywhere from California to Georgia, from North Dakota to South Texas. We've put them in situations where they completely perform day in and day out with their power, the sharpness of the blades. Every single bit of that zero-turn capability gives you the advantage, gives you the confidence to get the job done. And now they have added tractors. Our tractors are doing projects for us on a daily basis. All of our duck properties, all of our different dwellings where we live, where we make our livings, we depend on the Bad Boy tractor to get the job done as well. And now you can depend on the Bad Boy power in their new E-series of hand tools. The blower, the trimmer, pull saw, the chainsaw, the backpack blower. We use these blowers in our goose and duck decoy trailers throughout the season, all over the country, blowing out debris, branches, mud, leaves, making sure that we are working in a well-manicured, clean environment is our goal, and that's why we have partnered and depend on everything Bad Boy. Again, out of the state of Arkansas, their mowers are American-made. We depend on them. I hope you do, too. Next time you're in the market for anything that Bad Boy offers, I promise you, you can depend on them. Bad Boy Mowers, the presenting sponsor of Benelli's The Foul Life.
Vision. I just had a lens retraction surgery last year. It's pretty much like cataracts that you're going to get in your 60s, 70s. Everybody's going to get it. Once you get it, your vision is there. It's never changing. Artificial lenses. I had it at 40s, and I'm telling you, with what I do with duck hunting and scouting and watching my daughter grow up, I'm just so thankful that I'm back to 20/15 in my right eye and 20/20 in my left eye, thanks to Dr. Matt Mills, who you've all heard on our podcast. But I want to protect my eyes, and that's exactly where one of our badass partners comes in. Oakley eyewear, the Oakley culture, the Oakley lifestyle. Protect your vision when you're shooting, when you're fishing. Nothing worse than getting a hook in the eye with somebody casting on the same boat. You just can't take it for granted. The damage the sun can cause, the rays, the UV, just keeping the dust and the dirt out of your eyes, just everything during a hunt, pit blind, boat blind, it doesn't matter, sun up. They make different lenses for different skies. They're sold all over the world, and they support the military and the Blue Line and conservation and hunting and fishing in the outdoors and living off the land. And we never hunt without our Oakleys. Everybody's like, why you always got your sunglasses on? Shouldn't be wearing sunglasses. You probably shouldn't in turkey hunting. I don't wear them in turkey hunting because of the vision of a turkey and the reflection. But when I'm shooting trap range or the sporting clays or the skeet or the five stand, or I'm in a duck hunt or a goose hunt, I have my Oakleys with me at all time. I put them in my banded backpack. I have them in an Oakley hard case. I keep them protected. The prism lenses, everything that goes in to the technology behind the Oakley brand and the frames, the function of them, all of the different lenses that you can get, like I mentioned, and the way they protect our eyes. The prism lens technology is second to none. You got to get a pair of Oakleys. I know there's a lot of choices out there when you want to protect your eyes, but remember, please support the brands that support this lifestyle. Oakley, the official eyewear of the Foul Life TV, the Foul Life podcast, and everything we do here at The Provider and Where the Pavement Ends. Thank you so much for supporting Oakley. Having storage when it comes to our bounty, whether we're on a duck hunt, a goose hunt, an upland hunt, fishing trip, we rely on Gator coolers. They're coolers, the different sizes, the different models. You need one on wheels because you're carrying a little bit more weight. You need a 45 quart, a 70 quart, 110 quart, smaller ones like the 20 quart. Do you need a personalized pad, a customized pad on top with your logo? What about their drinkware, their tumblers, their thermoses, all of their highball cups, their coffee cups, their wine cups? Gator Coolers, Louisiana, Brian McGeehee, GATRCoolers.com. No O in there. Gator, GATR. We depend on them daily. You got to make sure that you're prepared. You got to condition that cooler, right, Crosby?
Got to have a good cooler. People that say you can use them other ones still, no.
I don't think that you can use the other ones that aren't the roto-molded style, and Gator Coolers is far ahead of the curve. Check them out at GatorCoolers.com. Get into their drinkware, to their coolers, get into their customized pads, and don't forget Gator Skin for your boat, your ski boat, your summer boat, your duck boat. All of our Gator Tail boats have the Gator Skin in them by Gator Coolers, and I'm telling you, it's customized, it's comfortable, it doesn't rot, it doesn't fade, it's got our company logos and branding, a lot of different designs you can do. Check out the new Gator Skin by Gator Coolers, the official cooler and drinkware of the Foul Life TV, the Foul Life podcast, and Where the Pavement Ends podcast and TV. Thank you all very much for supporting Gator Coolers. I think lighting is everything. I don't like being in the dark. I don't even like secrets being told. That's kind of keeping you in the dark, isn't it? I don't like setting up decoys in the dark. I don't like looking for anything in the dark. Turn your headlights and drive down the street. Obviously, it's impossible. Lighting is everything. A well-lit room, a well-lit hunt. They make your decoys look better when that sun's shining on them. Mallards perform different, and we perform better and differently when we have our rigid light bars, all of the rigid lights on our trailer, when we can see what we are doing, setting up our blinds, concealing our blinds, setting up our spread, exact distance from a fence or a tree line that we want to be. When you can brighten up the night, brighten up those early mornings, I'm telling you, it makes your hunting success go way up. The odds are in your favor when you put Rigid on your trucks, in your bumpers, in your light bars. Check them out at rigidindustries.com. I can't say enough about their LED technology. It is the best. It's often imitated but never duplicated. I know you've heard that before, but there is nothing like Rigid lights. R-I-G-I-D. You'll find them on all of our Corning Ford Fords, all of our rigs, all of our trailers, on the noses, on the sides, on the back door. When we turn on our lights on our trucks and trailers, we ignite the field and we ignite the hunt. And that's exactly what Rigid Industry does. It ignites our passion for the outdoors. The official LED light bar and lights of the Foul Life podcast and Benelli's The Foul Life TV. See them in action right now, exclusively on the Outdoor Channel. Brand new episode, season 15 of Benelli's The Foul Life. Thank you so much, Rigid. And thank you all for supporting the brands and partners that support us.
You've been listening to Jack Daniels Presents This Life Ain't For Everybody with Chad Bilding, and it was powered by Bad Boy Mowers and Tractors. Come back for part two with Chad, Coach Jake McKinley, and Rob Knatzer.
This has been another episode of This Life Ain't For Everybody podcast with Rob from Triple S, Coach Jake McKinley from the University of Nevada Reno baseball program. Thank you all for listening to another episode of This Life Ain't For Everybody.
Listen to new and archived episodes of This Life Ain't For Everybody anytime on SoundCloud, iHeart, Spotify, and This Life Ain't For Everybody.com. Thanks for listening.